34 Lectures on Ancient Philosophy. Shen. Infinite being thus flows through God into creation, and existence ascends through God to its infinite source. God is therefore the least material and the most spiritual of all created things, of all beings the eldest, of all things the newest. Yet, being differentiated from immortal being, deity is mortal and subject to ultimate reabsorption into universal space. In the most abstract sense, God is a hypothetical point established in the midst of absolute self through which it, absolute self, manifests forth into tangibility and consequent impermanent existence. God is the all-made one, the universe is the one made all. Of all the terms with which deity has been invested, there is none more simple and yet more consistent with the nature of all than that used by Plato, who defines God as the unmoved, self-moving mover. God is unmoved in the sense that it is the sure foundation which will remain as long as time. God is self-moving in that activity is its innate quality. God is the all-mover in that it is the life-giving principle animating all the structures which combine to form the inferior universe. God is the seed in the field of space. From the dark philosophic earth of infinite being it draws all that it manifests. In the symbolism of the Far East, God comes as a lotus bud upon the surface of the great sea which, after living its appointed span, dies back into the infinite ocean of chaos. God is the firstborn, the infinite monad so well described by Democritus in his development of the atomic theory. Now comes the legitimate question, if absolute being is unlimited and unconditioned with all its forces in a state of suspension, what causes these periodic centers or deities to come into being and what law governs their continuance and ultimate dissolution? In other words, if the absolute possesses neither will nor activity in a centralized or manifesting state, how is the genesis of gods and worlds to be explained? Why does not the absolute remain throughout duration in the same unknowing and all-pervading state? It is difficult to conceive of a perfect state giving birth to an imperfect state, and yet, according to philosophy, this is God. THEDFINEFUNDATION 35. Exactly what occurs when universal being supports ephemeral creation upon the surface of itself, or, as the Hindu mythologist would say, Varaha, the boar incarnation of Vishnu, elevates cosmos upon its tusks. The answer to the problem of first cause has confounded several otherwise excellent systems of theology, and the solution advanced by mystical philosophy is one of the most daring postulates of the human mind. Yet for man with his limited intelligence to ponder too deeply upon such abstract mysteries is highly dangerous, for the solidarity of thought itself is jeopardized. Sir Francis Bacon, one of the greatest thinkers of the modern world, realized how fatal to the success of the seeker after truth is the assumption of knowledge. Knowledge he declared to be the end, not the beginning, of the rational quest after facts. Much of the body of truth, however, is ascertained by the aid of certain fundamental postulations which must then run the gauntlet of observation and experimentation. Unable to delineate the boundaries or profiles of universal cause, the mind must necessarily reduce cosmic phenomena to terms apprehensible to human reason. To cope with the problems of the abstract, the mind must first discover in the concrete the analogy of the abstract. Having found a simple natural analogy, the philosopher employs the most basic of all the Hermetic axioms, namely, that which is below is like unto that which is above. The law of analogy is the most powerful weapon ever placed in the hands of man with which to solve the riddle of the unknown, for by analogy he is able to classify the orders of invisible life, and chart that vast interval between the limitation of human nature and the limitlessness of divine nature. With the assistance of the law of analogy, let us then approach the problem of first cause. Sleep is a state somewhat resembling death, in fact St. Paul definitely relates them to each other. Death, moreover, is analogous to the state of the absolute in that it is the cessation of that activity which destroys the tranquility of infinite duration. Again, no sense of time, place, or condition is apparent during sleep. A few seconds of a distorted dream may represent a lifetime in which persons 36 lectures on ancient philosophy and places come and go with kaleidoscopic speed. Speed also partakes of the nature of the absolute in that the objective world disappears, the sleeper rests in an unknowing state and an almost nirvanic trance-like condition controls the functioning parts. During sleep there is neither will nor rational activity in the objective world, oblivious to the entire panorama of existence, the objective soul lies in a state which is neither light nor darkness and which defies intelligent definition. Sleep, however, does not override the claims of habit. If a person is accustomed to awake at a certain hour, when that hour arrives consciousness seemingly rises out of unconsciousness with no apparent motivation other than the subtle, innate urge of habit. The individual wakes, and grasping with drowsy fingers the sense perceptions, assumes the labors of the day. The mind was never told to rouse the sleeper, nor did he have any realization that some intangible agent would at a certain time dissipate the state of dreaming and force the life back into wakeful activity. The sleeper suddenly opens his eyes and discovers it to be the usual rising hour. Habit is seemingly stronger than the state of sleep, for it is something that awakens the sleeper even when he cannot wake himself. Therefore, says the ancient doctrine, the comings and goings of creation upon the surface of infinite expanse are the impulses of the law of periodicity. Thus periodicity may be defined as the habit of infinite space. Habit causes the unknown elements and agencies comprising the absolute periodically to spawn forth worlds and to draw them back again into itself periodically. Habit causes the sleeping universe to awaken after the 7 nights of rest, and after its 7 days of labor. Habit and necessity again cause the tired creation to sink back into the arms of space. Though not a thinking substance, space contains the potentiality of thought. Thought is simply one of the numerous limited expressions of space and does not come into manifestation until the creative processes have limited the all to that condition known as intelligence. That is the reason why the law of periodicity, or the spontaneous awakening of life, GODTHEDIVINEFUNDATION 37, is necessary, in that SPA-CE possesses no tangible urge or force other than habit, which is itself a purely hypothetical term. It is the supreme and eternal habit of absolute being to create and also to take creation back again into itself. Thus the outpouring and the inflowing may be likened to the ebb and flow of an eternal sea. Creation sinking into space is no better able to conceive of the absolute than is man to conceive of the substance of sleep. Nor do the 7 sleepers upon awakening from their ages of slumber have any more concept of the condition from which they have emerged than has man when he rises from his slumbers. It is a daring thought to define cosmic law as the habit of space, but the urges which immutably direct all things to their predestined end are thus explained periodically upon the face of not being, which is all being. there appear centers of life, the chaifyas, or seeds of future worlds. The swastika is their proper symbol, for it is the whirl ing across that represents the centralizing motion of the eternal all. This first all-inclusive bubble, a magnificent iridescent sphere floating gracefully through eternity, is called God, and within its transparent shell creation lives and moves and has its being. Its purpose finally fulfilled, the bubble bursts and disappears, its parts are reabsorbed into the surrounding apparent nothingness. All that man is or can ever hope to be depends upon his concept of God. No individual is greater than the God he worships, nor is he capable of worshipping a concept of God greater than himself. Thus is established a vicious circle. The noble concept of Baron von Leibniz that the universe is made up of monads or metaphysical germs all contained within one great monad may be contrasted with the theological concept of the last century, which conceived the deity to be a married man who took strange delight, as Voltaire has noted, in watching his creation eat the body of his beloved son at the sacrament. Man's concept of God must pass through three definite states symbolized by the dot, the line, and the circle, which received so much consideration in the preceding lecture. The lowest concept of God is as a personality, a physical entity, whose symbol is the circumference of the circle. Superior to 38 lectures on Ancient Philosophy. This concept is that of God as an individuality, a mental entity, whose symbol is the line. The third and highest definable concept is that of God as a spiritual entity, a permeating and diffusing life-giving principle, whose symbol is the dot. But above all these concepts and superior to God even as a spiritual entity is that concept of absolute space, formless and definitionless, whose only symbol is the blank sheet of paper. In every philosophic system, God is either the beginning or the end of the chain of thought. We may invest our concept of deity with certain qualities and conditions and, accepting that as a starting point, seek to grasp the necessary process involved in the creation of the phenomenal sphere. Or we may posit as our working formula certain divine manifestation in the material universe, and by induction seek to understand the nature of a deity capable of producing such phenomena out of its own nature. Thus in our investigation we either begin with the dot and travel toward the circumference, or we begin with the circumference and travel toward the dot. On the one hand we posit a deity and then, imagining ourselves to be that deity, construct a universe. On the other hand we posit a minute atom and through an infinite series of combinations and unfoldments trace manifesting life back to its spiritual source. Antiquity posited divinity and then constructed the universe. The 20th century first posits the universe and then looks for God. As God, however, is not obvious to the crass materialist, he is often entirely eliminated in the findings of that particular type of scientist. You will remember that upon reading Laplace's great work upon astronomy, Napoleon made the remark, "But you make no mention of God," to which the great scientist haughtily replied, "Sire, I have no need for that hypothesis." Generally speaking, the elimination of God by the scientist is only a passing symptom. It occurs at that stage where the scientist, like the precocious child, upon reaching the summit of Fool's Mountain, decides that he himself is sufficient to postulate a cause for the universe and is qualified to manipulate it according to his own whims. Upon essaying the role of